Our coverage continues from the 2019 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show in New Orleans, Louisiana, powered by Corteva Agriscience, your partner in range and pasture productivity. Right now, pleased to have along with us Colin Woodall, lead lobbyist for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He's in their Washington, D.C. office. And Colin, lots to talk about right now as far as issues are concerned that you are watching, your team is watching in Washington. What are some things that are really top of mind as we arrive here in New Orleans at this annual convention?
A lot of issues that we're talking about, ranging from fake meat to dietary guidelines to transportation to trade. And the thing is that we're trying to make sure everybody understands that even though this is a divided Congress, we still have the opportunity to engage. We still have the opportunity to work with this new Congress and try to figure out a path forward for all of our policy priorities.
I kind of go through those issues. You just mentioned fake meat. Obviously, this is something that really we almost surfaced about this time a year ago. We hadn't heard too much about it until it kind of was pushed to the surface by NCBA.
Yeah, that's right. A year ago was when we passed our policy to make this a priority issue. And it's been a lot of fun working this. There are very few issues that we have the luxury of working on where not only the members understand what it is we're doing, but also the general consumer kind of has an idea of what's going on. And generally, the overall yuck factor behind fake meat is definitely something that's helped us move forward with our ask. And that ask was for USDA to have a role in the daily inspection of this product, but more importantly, for USDA to be able to approve the labels. So that way, these companies cannot use the term clean meat in labeling their product. And we were successful in getting that done. Now, the FDA still has a part in this, and they're going to look at the overall technology and try to make sure it's safe. But we really wanted USDA engaged, and that's what we got.
And I guess there's some states out there that are kind of maybe even up in the ante a little bit in as far as the definition that can be used as far as these products are concerned.
Yeah, there's a lot of states talking with their constituents and trying to look at legislation that would really go out and protect that term beef, in a lot of cases meat. And for us, that is a good thing because that's going to be the next fight on the federal side is what can they actually call it? And we have to protect our terms. And the term that means the most to us is beef, and that's our priority. Let's protect that term beef because we do not want to find ourselves in the same situation that our friends in the dairy industry have been dealing with. And so these state pieces of legislation, I think, will be helpful with that.
Well, it was interesting that even some of the, like muscle cuts, in other words, some of the things that we just associate immediately with beef, for ribeye, fillet, these kind of things are hopefully going to be protected too.
Yes, absolutely. We're looking at the whole slate of nomenclature for our products to make sure that there's no way that the consumer is going to be, duped by this product. But we still don't have a specific definition for this product yet. And as I said, that's going to be a big part of 2019 is determining what should this be called.
You alluded to a couple of other issues there, including trade. I thought I might talk about that next. Even this week, we've got what the United States talking to China, and of course, there's a lot of other issues beyond that, too.
The talks with the Chinese are extremely important to us because the president's been telling us for quite some time that for the short-term pain that comes with retaliatory tariffs, we could have the chance at long-term gain. And he's exactly right. If he is successful in these talks in taking down the ban on the use of implant hormones, the ban on beta agonist growth promotants, then that could potentially make the Chinese market a $4 billion market for us. USMEF has done a lot of work on that. So that would be just absolutely phenomenal for us. So that's why we are supporting what the president is doing. We are hoping that these talks continue to move forward, but we know that beef is on the table here.
Now, we've got, of course, Greg Dowd as a part of the team over at the U.S. Trade Representative's office. I know that he, among things he's been working on talking about, the dealings with the Japanese. Are we going to get something done fairly quickly, you think, with Japan to try to level that playing field with the folks that signed the TPP?
We're very optimistic that we will get something moving forward quite quickly with the Japanese. And as you said, Ambassador Dowd has a lot of background within the cattle business, having once worked for NCBA, so he knows these issues. And he understands what this means to be behind the curve when it comes to the tariff advantage that these other countries have on us. You know, our top competition into Japan is Australia and Canada. They now have 14% tariff advantage. That's going to continue to increase. And even though the Japanese consumer may want our product, a lot of times it comes down to what they can afford. And that's what we're going to be watching very closely as we start seeing the 2019 numbers come in as to whether or not those TPP countries are actually starting to erode our market share. And if that's the case, then I think that will just add even more impetus to USTR to get this done as quickly as possible.
Yes, with the Aussies having some severe drought issues, perhaps we'll get a little bit of extra time before they can really take full advantage of the TPP tariff issue.
No, that's true. They do have some internal issues that they're dealing with. And, you know, we don't wish drought on anybody, not even our competition. And so we are watching that closely. But you're right, that might help us here a little bit. But we also have to keep in mind that Canada is a part of the TPP. And when you look at the product that they are producing up there, they can go in and probably take some market share from us. So we have to be very cognizant of that and make sure that we are aware of what they're doing.
Other issues that you're following, you mentioned a couple more.
We are really focused on electronic logging devices and hours of service. This is something that we spent a majority of 2018 looking at as well. We have been successful in exempting livestock haulers from implementation of the ELDs. Even during the government shutdown, we were able to maintain that exemption. So we do believe that we will continue to do that through this divided Congress. But the underlying issue is still there, Ron, and that is we have to address hours of service for livestock haulers. It is a welfare issue, plain and simple. These animals have to get to the next step, and they're hauling in order to arrive in the best shape possible. And we do believe that the Department of Transportation finally understands that. Now we're going to have to work with them to see if we can extend those hours of service. So that's going to be one of our priorities for 2019.
With the government shutdown ended for now anyway, hopefully EPA will be able to go ahead and publish their new and improved or the WOTUS 2.0, if you want to call it that, whatever you want to actually refer to it as. But I know that first glance, a lot of folks in animal agriculture and agriculture in general pretty happy.
We are pretty happy. You know, with any rule or regulation coming out of a federal department, there's always going to be some small tweaks that are required, but it achieved what we wanted, and that's rolling back the encroachment on private property rights, which the 2015 Obama rule did. And, you know, all of this was a factor of the president making this a priority. Administrator Pruitt made it a priority. And his successor now, the newly nominated Administrator Wheeler, has also made it a priority. So we are still optimistic that we're going to get this done. It's going to be something that we can defend in court. And ultimately, as I said, it protects private property rights. And that's what we've wanted all along.
2018 farm law. Also, obviously, needs to be implemented. It was been delayed by at least a month or so now with the government shutdown. Priorities there as far as, you know, what are there some things within that law that you're going to be watching closely on the actual maybe fine-tuning of the rules, regs?
The top priority for us is going to be implementation of all of the animal protection language that was included. That includes the grants to the states for prevention activities. It also includes the funding for the system of federal labs that are in place. And for us, our number one issue within that farm bill was getting a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank established, authorized, and funded. And so now it's going to be working with the secretary to take the authorization that's in the bill and the funding that was also included and get started on that. It's not going to be everything that we need, but it's a start. And we always knew it was going to take a while to build up to a vaccine bank that ultimately can take care of us, but we have to start somewhere.
Finally, I thought it was rather interesting, Secretary Perdue announcing this week three folks that have been renominated by the president to go into roles that need to be confirmed by the Senate. Their nominations expired at the end of December, including Dr. Brashears from Texas Tech. He's basically slid them into USDA into somewhat more of a junior role. but they're going to be able to get to work.
It was a great move by the secretary. You know, the secretary is frustrated that he doesn't have a full team. And we, as the constituents, are also frustrated that he doesn't have a full team because there's so much that needs to be done, especially in the realm of food safety. So I think his role of putting them as deputies was very smart because at least they can get to work. And in that role, they will still be the acting undersecretaries until they are ultimately confirmed, which they will be confirmed here this year. But this this kind of stops the waiting for us. So we're excited that happened, especially in terms of Dr. Brashears. We have a great relationship with her. She's got a great knowledge of this industry. And so being able to work with her moving forward is going to be extremely important to us.
And that's a really important position when you start talking about food safety and dealing with consumers.
You know, there's a lot of undersecretaries at USDA, and a lot of them have very important roles and do a lot of good stuff. But I will tell you, the one that probably has as big an influence in our industry as anybody else is the Undersecretary for Food Safety, because the work that they do, not only on the inspection side, but also working with industry to try to prevent foodborne outbreaks, is extremely important in maintaining the confidence of the consumer in American beef.
You mentioned dietary guidelines a few moments ago as we started talking. That obviously is going to start moving more and more to center of the stage.
So we are working on what will ultimately be the 2020 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. You know, this is the group that looks at the dietary guidelines, the old food guide pyramid. But right now we're in the process of submitting nominees to USDA on who should be on the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. This is the committee that will be established to look at all the existing science and to make the recommendations on what these guidelines should look like. So we're trying to make sure we have as many people that have good beef experience on there as possible, so that way they can promote the nutritional value of beef. If you remember when we went through this process for the 2015 guidelines, we spent a lot of time pushing back against the advisory committee because it had been stacked with a lot of activist scientists. And so not only were they disparaging our product based upon their view of nutrition, but they were also disparaging our product based upon the environmental impact or their perceived environmental impact of the cattle business. And so it completely skewed what those nominations or recommendations should have been. We were able to work with our friends and the secretary at the time, Secretary Vilsack, to fix that, but we were trying to make sure we don't have to fix issues again by having the right people on the panel from the get-go.
There's somebody different in the White House right now, so that might be easier.
You know, the administration makes a big difference in any sort of departmental activity. So we know that just given our track record so far with the Trump administration, with Secretary Perdue and his team, that we do believe that they will do everything they can to make sure that the science that's out there on the nutritional benefits of beef will be considered and part of what will ultimately, as I said, be the 2020 dietary guidelines.
Lots of ground covered with Colleen Woodall of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's D.C. office here in New Orleans at the 2019 Cattle Industry Convention. I'm Ron Hayes reporting.